Welcome to the Jess Cagle Podcast with Julia Cunningham. Each week, Jess and Julia sit down with Hollywood's biggest names to discuss their current projects and take a trip down memory lane as they dive deep into their classic catalogs. SiriusXM presents the Jess Cagle Podcast with Julia Cunningham. Now, here are your hosts, Jess and Julia.
I think it's safe to say he's the most acclaimed documentarian in history. Obviously, the Civil War, the Roosevelts, Prohibition. He's covered subjects from World War II to country music to baseball to jazz, from Jackie Robinson to Susan B. Anthony, and now Muhammad Ali on CBS, which is such a great documentary. It's up now, airing from the 19th to the 22nd, and you can also see episodes on PBS.org, streaming for free. Ken Burns, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm so great to be with you, Jess and Julia.
So this was, you were working on this. And I know that you spend years working on every documentary, but this was 6 years in the works for Muhammad Ali. What? He's obviously been well chronicled. There have been, you know, scripted movies and things about him. Why did you want to dive in? And what were you hoping to find that had not been thoroughly explored before?
I'm not sure we go in thinking that what we're going to find or what we're looking for. We're just interested in a way of telling stories that are engaging and comprehensive. And I think there are lots of documentaries. I'll leave the feature films out of the way. I think Michael Mann's The First 20 Minutes of the Ali Thing, the biopic with Will Smith, which is just a slice of his life, is one of the best 20 minutes in all of film. There are lots of documentaries, and there's a couple of really, really good documentaries among the best documentaries ever made. They feature a particular fight or a couple of series of fights or a couple years in his life. We were interested in asking a big, big kind of global question about who is this guy who died the most beloved person on the planet. And so we wanted to begin his birth and boyhood in Jim Crow segregated Louisville, Kentucky, and go all the way to his death from Parkinson's in 2016, which is just 5 years ago. And we wanted to do the boxing, of course. The most important fights, the 20 or so most important fights that we cover in the documentary, are like the collected works of William Shakespeare. You can't make this stuff up, it feels like it. But we also wanted to follow that personal thread. We wanted to understand about his family life and his parents and his brother and his wives and his children. We wanted to know that this was a spiritual journey more often than not, people just say, and he joined a separatist religious cult, the Nation of Islam, and that's kind of it, and not understand it as a kind of incredibly evolving story. So here's a guy who in the late 60s and early 70s was one of the most reviled figures in America by a huge segment of the population. Hero to me growing up. I followed his entire amateur as well as professional. I mean, I remember the Rome Olympics and him winning. So I've been around for a while. But he was reviled. And I want to know how you get from reviled to the kind of pantheon that he's in right now, which is legitimate and good. So he intersects with every major theme of the last half of the 20th century, the role of sports in society, the role of the black athlete, the nature of black masculinity and black manhood, the civil rights movement, which is not a one thing but an evolving and changing thing with lots of different opinions and stuff, race in America, war, politics, faith, religion, sex. I mean, these are the stuff that we're grappling with today, which makes Muhammad Ali incredibly pertinent, but that's not why you do it. The story itself, the arc of it, is just so interesting. So being at PBS permits us to have a deep dive. You know, we can spend 7.5 years where the mechanics of the marketplace don't work like that. PBS has one foot tentatively in the marketplace and the other kind of proudly and defiantly out of it. And so that means we can spend 10.5 years doing Vietnam or 7.5 doing this one and 6 in production. And it allows us to discover hundreds of hours of footage and 15,000 photographs and interview many, many dozens of people for hundreds of hours and permits us to sort of kind of surround him from every possible vantage point in which you get a clearer picture. It's like a, you know, it's like if somebody's doing a 3D of you, they need to take pictures from all angles. So we have family members, we have his brother, we have two daughters, we have two of his ex-wives, we have people in the West End, the comfortable middle class, safe neighborhood in segregated Louisville where he grew up. We have many sports writers and scholars and poets and hangers-on in his corner and boxers, and all of them together kind of give you this accumulated sense that this is not only the greatest athlete of the 20th century, maybe of all time, but he's one of the most important Americans who's ever lived. And he is as resonant, his message, his sacrifice, the story of freedom that it represents and the story of love that it represents and courage are as timeless as any of those themes, of course, are. I didn't mean to soliloquize, but the kind of why Ali is, you know, like a big fat one down the middle of the plate, and I need to sort of drive in a few runs with it.
Well, Ken, I was saying when we sort of started our show today, I loved how you opened the documentary. It's just this short sequence of Muhammad Ali, who is sitting with his daughter, and they're in what looks like maybe a diner. I think it's his daughter, Miriam. I'm not 100% sure.
Yes, it is.
Is it Miriam? It's Miriam. And he's convincing her to look at a horse outside because he steals her cornflakes. And it's just this really wonderful
So Julia, there's a really, really great story to that. I'm so glad you asked that. It's like you walked into my trap. this is a film that is co-directed by my daughter, Sarah Burns, and her husband, David McMahon. We made the Central Park Five and we made Jackie Robinson. It was when we were gearing up for Jackie Robinson that we heard about this and wholeheartedly jumped in the deep end of the Muhammad Ali pool. So anyway, this is like we're well into editing. We've got a good beginning with his daughter, Hannah, talking about being carried as a baby and feeling the echoes of people yelling, which is as intimate and as personal as you want to get. But it's still about celebrity, right? It's still about the phenomenon of Muhammad Ali. And we had that scene that you're describing, the stealing of the cornflakes, embedded deeply and perfectly for months in episode 3, like halfway through episode 3. I mean, it was there. Nobody had even thought about changing it. And I just sort of said, let's move that to the beginning, because this is a human being. No matter what he says about being able to flick off the light and get into bed, you know, before the light actually went off. And I'm sure if I'd asked him how he put his pants on, he would have said, you know, I can jump into them all at once. He put his pants on one leg at a time like the rest of us. And there is not a parent on this planet, and I am a parent of four, that hasn't stolen something, some food off my kid's plate by going, hey, look over there. Did you see that? And then, you know, French fries are the usual thing that disappear. But this was a scene that just said to everybody, this is a human being. And there's not a kid that probably doesn't remember somebody stealing off their plate. And so we moved it. We found a perfectly good thing to fit in episode 3, which is tonight on PBS, the third episode. You can get them all streaming. But it's a really good story. And it, as soon as it was there, it was like it had always been there. You always had to begin in black, which is not our choice. I mean, you said, what do you want to eat? You hear this voice and he goes, cornflakes. And then you're up at the beautiful cherubic face of Miriam and you're off and running.
You're listening to The Jess Cagle Show with Julia Cunningham. We are here with the great Ken Burns, whose multi-episode documentary series on Muhammad Ali is airing on PBS right now. So much interesting things that you've found. I mean, obviously, what you're known for, Ken, is, you know, telling these stories with footage and photographs. We have seen over the years so much footage of Muhammad Ali and heard so much about him, but there are so many revelations about his childhood in the first episode that's up on pbs.org right now. You can stream it for free. And you really sort of beautifully explain how he became Muhammad Ali. In fact, I think the last line in that episode is, and you know,
boom,
Muhammad Ali is born.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about his childhood in Kentucky, in Louisville. I didn't know just how difficult his relationship with his father was.
So yeah, it's pretty interesting. His mother was a classic, you know, everybody remembered her as the kindest heart in the neighborhood, the church-going, friendly, outgoing, loving person, and he certainly got that. His father was an angry man. He was a race man. He was a philanderer, as Muhammad Ali would become later on in his life. He was bitter because he was a painter, and nobody took him seriously, so he ended up being a sign painter, and he realized that the difference between being a successful artist that was treated seriously and what he had to do came down to the color of his skin. And so as protective as the West End was, and as loving as both Cassius Clay, as he was originally named, and his brother Rudy felt their family life was, it was also fraught with a lot of danger and the cops getting called and fights and things like that. Also remember, this is at a time, he's 14 years old when Emmett Till is kidnapped and tortured and mutilated and murdered, and his mother, Emmett Till's mother, had the just unbelievable courage to leave an open casket and permitted Jet magazine to photograph. So every black person in America saw these photographs of this tortured, mutilated person, which is unfortunately not the first time that had ever happened. It was probably the 10,000th time that had happened, you know? And he was not that much older than Muhammad Ali, and it deeply affected him, and it helped set up who he's going to become. And in fact, the accident, the sort of origin story of boxing, is that he and his brother have a bike, you know, which is an unheard of thing for a Joe Frazier or a Sonny Liston or some of the other people, that Larry Holmes, that he grew up, that he would end up fighting. And it was stolen. And he went to find a cop, and he found a cop who was teaching kids how to box, white and black, and just said yes. And within a few months, improbably, he is saying he will be the greatest. I mean, he's just a kid. He's a teenager. He's 14 years old, and he's saying it's going to be the greatest. It's like somebody going to Washington, D.C. on a class trip and going, oh, and I'll be the president. Right? And that's happened a few times. Bill Clinton, you know, I'm going to be the president, he said to himself, and somehow it happened. It's a great story, but it's fraught with all of the dynamics of American life. This is a film about freedom, and freedom for a black person is incredibly hard in the United States of America, to escape the specific gravity of the injustices that are visited daily, millions of injustices in the course of a lifetime on black people is an amazing thing. And some people are able to do it. He did it, but also never forgot where he came from and never forgot trying to bring everybody else along. And it's courage. It's a brutal sport. It's courage to get in the ring and to do it for as long as he did, way too long. But there's courage to refuse induction into the draft for religious beliefs when the rest of the country thinks it's just a political middle finger to the United States and so throws the book at him, and he loses 3.5 years of the height of his professional ability. And it's about love, because ultimately he resolved all of this with this great, incredible love for others. It's so inspiring. I'm so happy that, you know, Sarah and Dave wrote the script, and the amount of deep dives that he did. You find little funny telling details. He's very generous all his life. He's giving away everything he has. He empties his pocket, gives off the coat, gives the Rolex watch. Doesn't matter who it is. Stranger, friend, family, whatever it might be. And at one point at the Fifth Street Gym in Miami where he's training for Liston, his Angelo Dundee, his trainer, comes over and says, see that guy in the wheelchair? He's going to convince you he's Roy Campanella, Brooklyn Dodger great, who was in a car accident and was paralyzed. And he said, he's a hustler, don't give him any money. So a few minutes later, he looks over and there is Ali ripping off bills, Cassius Clay then, ripping off bills and giving it to this guy. And Dundee comes over and he goes, hey, I told you, this guy's a hustler. And he goes, Ange, we have legs. And that was the spirit of this human being all his life. He said, it's on his gravestone, service to others is the rent you pay for your room in heaven. And, you know, you don't die the most beloved person in the world without cause. And we wanted to investigate that cause, along with the boxing, along with the infidelity, along with the wives and the children, and all the other stuff, all the politics, all the faith stuff, and just kind of get to that place where his daughter Rashida says at the end of the film, boxing was this much. Meaning, it could have been, you know, the bike couldn't have been stolen, and he decided to be a simple carpenter. Simple Carpenters have gone places in this world and this world's history.
Well, I found it interesting also learning about while he was in school, and you have to remember this is the 50s, that he struggled in school. You say that he most likely or probably was dyslexic, but he also was the class clown, which completely makes sense. But also thinking of a young black man, 1950s, would go to school as the class clown, carrying a purse, wearing lipstick, you know, being the life of the party, which that would never happen ever,
anywhere,
you would think.
Everywhere. Anywhere. I mean, he's in segregated schools, and his biographer, Jonathan Eig, believes he was dyslexic. Probably no reason not to believe it. But it's just amazing. He had a joie de vivre. He had a sense early on that he knew that he was destined for something. And you see it later on when he's in the Nation of Islam, and they don't approve of sports, and they kind of don't know what to do with him, and they love that he's there and he's famous. But that, you know, so he's saying, I may not box anymore, but I know I'm here for a reason. And he's here for a reason, and he's to help us, us with the smaller lives, him with the gigantic, larger-than-life life, with larger-than-life flaws, deal with our own strengths and our own weaknesses and our own challenges that come into our lives. It's a remarkable, I don't want to get more biblical than I already have, but it's a kind of parable, the story of this life, because it touches on so many themes that animate our own lives and the questions that are about today.
There were so many small, I know you've got to go, but there were so many small, important moments. The bicycle being stolen, the day that he wants to talk to Sugar Ray Robinson, and Sugar Ray Robinson kind of snubs him, which informs the way Muhammad Ali dealt with fans the rest of his life, because he never wanted anyone to feel snubbed. But there was also a really important, this is before he met Malcolm X, before he joined the Nation of Islam, but he was on a radio show with Gorgeous George, who was this flamboyant pro wrestler. And I just want to hear you tell me about how that
David Remnick, the editor of The New Yorker and a biographer of a wonderful, wonderful early book about Muhammad Ali, says this is a key to understanding. Gorgeous George was hated. He was the foil in a lot of these phony wrestling things. But Ali looked at it and goes, oh, I get it. As he would say later, boo, hiss, you know, yell, throw peanuts, but whatever you do, pay to get in. So he saw that people hated Gorgeous George, but they loved to have him there. And so in a way, he translated it into the real world of boxing, not the false world of wrestling. And he brought it into American life with its dynamics and its schisms about race and who can brag and who can't brag and who can do this and who can't do that. And so he took the stuff of life and he turned it into something that would be useful for himself, but I think in the end for all of us. Yeah, he becomes the guy that you love to hate. And you can hear him getting into the arenas and they're booing him, you know? And he's like, fine. I'm still
Ken
the greatest.
The
and he was.
The documentary is so great. It's up on PBS right now. On PBS.org, you can actually stream the first couple of episodes for free. And it's a true Ken Burns documentary. It goes deep and it is fascinating.
This has been the Jess Cagle Podcast with Julia Cunningham, a SiriusXM production. Hear new episodes every Tuesday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.